Today's show, wild, wild week. We got Penn State. We got USC. We got Clemson. We got teams that actually won games. We got bad calls. We got controversy. We got all sorts of stuff. Stay tuned.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
When you have a five-star quarterback and you're giving your wide receivers a chance to throw the ball, you have no faith in that quarterback.
Russ Dellinger.
This is a wonderful move and really should happen more often. The evil media, okay, should be put in their place.
And SI's Pat 40.
It was a hell of a return for my money. Honest to God, I will say this. I think Cooper Jean is the second best player in the Big Ten behind Marvin Harrison. He is unbelievable.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. What a crazy Saturday that was.
That was something.
We had a little bit of everything. We got a lot to get to. Buckle up. Buckle in, people. We're going to try. I want to start with still the biggest game of the day. It wasn't the most exciting game of the day, for sure. But number 3 Ohio State, 20-12 over number 6 Penn State. Pat and I were both at the Horseshoe to watch this game. Turned out to be a snooze fest, unless you like pretty good defense or overthrown passes. Start with Penn State.
I love both, Dan.
You do, yeah. People watching this game, the number of people who contacted me through like direct messenger on Twitter, like, stop making fun of Iowa. Stop making fun of Iowa. Have you seen Penn State try to play offense? Yeah. They're number 6. Of course, Penn State walloped Iowa. So,
yes.
Little Hawkeyes, watch your chirping. That was before they had an inadvertent fair catch, which I didn't mean. Anyway, we'll get to that. The narrative coming in, the question coming in, Pat, was, can James Franklin get this team to the elite status? Can he get a win? He did not. He's now 1-9 against Ohio State. He is 3-16 at Penn State in games against top 10 opponents. He's 2-12 on the road against top 25 teams. He can beat all the teams. Somebody put it, well, Penn State has a top 10 program, like facilities, fans, recruiting classes, every single thing. They just don't have a top 10 team. Maybe they do towards the end, but they can't get in that top 5. Mm-hmm. What happened on Saturday?
Penn State flopped. That's what happened. They were not good enough. They shrank, I think, from the moment. Their offense was a mess. Their play calling, I thought, was particularly bad, almost nonsensical at times. Their third down execution was horrible. Their receivers were pedestrian. Their quarterback was overmatched. You know, all those things. And credit to Ohio State. Don't want to just say that this is all about Penn State failing, but because Ohio State, you know, A, won the game, and B, won it without Travion Henderson, their running back, without Emeka Egbuka, without Denzel Burks, cornerback. So they were a little bit banged up, and they won the game, and Marvin Harrison is phenomenal. But this is not a vintage Ohio State team. It's a good Ohio State team, but it's not a vintage one. It's compared to some of the ones we have seen. And I think the Ohio State fans know as much. Dan, one of the things that struck me, you and I walked down the stairs from the press box near the top of this massive stadium, down many flights of stairs with these Ohio State fans and through the concourse to the post-game press conference. And they were kind of muted. They were just like, yeah, well, glad we won. But it wasn't like this euphoria, like, oh my gosh, we're good. You know, well,
there's that one guy. Good. That one guy kept trying to get the OHIO chant going and it wasn't working.
No, everybody's like, yeah, nah.
And generally speaking, nothing makes Buckeye fans prouder than proving their ability in a group.
Yes.
To spell a four-letter word.
True.
They can't do it alone, right? It's like Family Feud. You got to huddle up, right? Yeah, you got to huddle up.
Yeah, it needs to be a combined effort.
Yeah.
Somebody handle the first two, and then somebody else handle the next two.
No, they were just like, I think they were asleep. It was like 4 hours. 400 punts. It was a long, boring football game. But I agree. Credit to Ohio State. But yeah, it's not there. Continue.
You know, and then, you know, James Franklin tried to gaslight us briefly after the game by saying, I'm not sure we didn't just see two of the best teams in the country. And then he added on the defensive side of the ball. And on the defensive side of the ball, he's right. But good Lord, that offensive display, well, that was not one of the best teams in the country. Come on. I mean, you get, in retrospect, you go back and look at who they have played, Penn State. Not much. Not much. You got a Delaware. You got a UMass. You got Iowa. Yeah. I mean, so there were a lot of empty calories getting to 6-0. And now the big thing on the resume is 6-1. That was not a close game. That was not a great effort from them.
Maserati Marv, if you watch the game on TV, it's all
Don't
you heard for the whole
Don't
game
like that nickname.
Was a Gus Johnson nickname. 11 catches, 162 yards in that backbreaker of a touchdown. Incredible to watch him. I saw a debate going around on social last night. If Penn State had Marvin Harrison, if you swapped him, would Penn State have won the game? I think a tough question to answer, obviously.
I think they might have.
it's an interesting one for sure.
This game was first won in October of 2019 when Ryan Day and Brian Hartline convinced Marvin Harrison to leave Philadelphia, drive directly past State College, Pennsylvania, and come out to Columbus. Because he is ridiculously, his dad is a Hall of Famer and one of the best ever, and we're gonna see if son can equal dad, but he might.
He's gonna have a chance. I mean,
yeah,
incredibly good.
Yeah, it's
hate to
it's
put
incredible.
That kind of heat on him, but that's your name.
He
is fantastic receiver,
and he's doing it on a team that at least, you know, Saturday didn't have the Trevion Henderson top running back, and has a new quarterback who has struggled. You know, obviously I watched the game on TV. I think it was Joel Klatt was the analyst, and he broke down some of Kyle McCord's mistakes, put it that way, leading the receiver too much, overthrowing. I mean, there are definitely issues there, but it doesn't matter. Because Marvin Harrison seems to bring in everything, and then what he does after the catch is just as good. It's pretty phenomenal. One stat, aside from Marvin Harrison's stats, one stat stuck out to me. Penn State went, this is from ESPN Stats and Info. Penn State went 1 of 16 on third downs, 6.3%.
And I believe they were over until a penalty gave them.
Last drive, too. It was the last drive.
So they started 0 for 15?
0 for 15, yeah.
Wow. Well, with
the
a minimum,
last drive, they got all their stats.
Yeah.
With a minimum of 15 third down attempts, the 1 for 16 is the worst third down conversion percentage by an AP-ranked team in a game in a decade, at least a decade.
Really?
It's pretty phenomenal note there from the stats and info department.
There was no offense incredible. There. They had 167 yards after 57 minutes of the game. Now, Penn State had a 14-point lead late and were just trying to kill clock. So they kind of backed off, and they were able to move it. They had 16 yards in the second half until that final drive.
Yeah, I saw James Franklin afterward talked about Jim Knowles and the defense and the timing of the pressures and the blitz and how they just really – kind of like rattled offensively. Like they were, I think he said something like they were a half second away from when the play develops. They were a half second away always, it seemed like. The pressures were just getting there just at the right time. You know, credit, Jim Knowles and what he's done, and how this is a different Ohio State team than we've seen in the past. You know, so many years, Ohio State's defense was the issue, right? Was the problem on the team, and now it's kind of the solution, and it's been interesting to see that evolution. I'm sure Ryan Day would want a little more, a lot more from his offense, but his defense is keeping the team in games and winning games.
I would expect that Ohio State will be underdog going in Ann Arbor. But their defense is good enough to beat Michigan. I don't know whether the offense is good enough to beat Michigan, but when you have it, if you can stop them from scoring, it's just not a great offense. It is a great defense. It is an excellent defense, but I don't really care if you're the number six team in the country and you've got a five-star recruits at running back. They rushed for 1.9 yards a carry, Penn State. Aller was completely out of sorts. He was rattled. Franklin knew some of the play calls were, I don't know what they were. There was cut plays. Aller missed wide open slants that could have converted a third down. There were two wide receiver throws and a double reverse double flea flicker. Like they were trying things.
Yeah.
Like when you have a five-star quarterback and you're giving your wide receivers a chance to throw the ball, you have no faith in that quarterback.
Right.
There was a great line once by Bill Belichick. They ran a play once when they had Tom Brady. They gave it to somebody through a pass, and it was either intercepted or didn't work. And the next Monday, I think Bill O'Brien actually told the story, and he said, we're sitting there reviewing the tape, and Belichick says, we have effing Tom Brady. Nobody around here throws the ball other than Tom Brady. And they didn't do it again for 10 years until they pulled out a Julian Edelman play in a famous play in a playoff game against Baltimore. But it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And you run those plays when you have no faith in your quarterback. And that, because if this is clicking like it should. So I don't know what you do with Penn State. I don't know what you do as your Penn State fan. I feel bad for you in a way. You're like, hey, it's fun. We're great. We're really good. But how do you go into these games with anything other than like dread of like, this is the, I mean, they had 6 points.
I saw James Franklin afterward turn to the old three-letter acronym NIL to get folks going, that we need more investment. And what's that?
He said this after?
I believe so. Did he not?
Not in the press conference.
Yeah, maybe. More money. That's always it.
That's always the answer.
Yeah, let me
I don't know. Well, no, they it. Always that's say, the new thing. You didn't do your part, Booster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Aller was in over his head yesterday, and then he looked and sounded like a 19-year-old in the postgame press.
Yeah, conference. I felt bad for him, crying.
Yeah, he was in tears. Yeah, and I will say this is a bit of a intramural media point, but while Caleb Williams, who has plenty of NIL money and experience and fame, and the rest of the USC Trojans were not available for interviews after their loss, Penn State brought out like 8 guys and sat them in there, including a quarterback who just went 18 for 42 throwing the ball.
And James Franklin is very accountable. Like he did say, I don't want to talk about legacy right now. It was a very good question by David Jones of Harrisburg. He was asking the question the fans are asking.
Yes.
Like, why can't we win this game? And he very politely and respectfully was like, I don't want to talk about that right now. It probably, and David said, this is really not the time, but this is all anyone's talking about. I want to talk about today's game. Yeah, first-class operation by Penn State. Look, everything about Penn State is first class. Yeah, it's a great program. Mm-hmm. It just can't beat the other great teams they play.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you say? James Franklin, tremendous leader. Mm-hmm. Great representative of the school, the program, the good players, good kids. They're all doing their thing. It's just like, and I don't know. I don't know whether that's maybe with this playoff, these teams could get in and have a little excitement or whatever. It's just a tough spot to be in. And I don't know how you solve it. When you lose these games, that's why Marvin Harrison says, I think I'll go to Ohio State, not Penn State.
Right.
Mm. Let me correct that about James Franklin, by the way. I saw a tweet from the Athletic, Penn State beat writer Audrey Snyder. She was recapping the last year of James Franklin's basically news conferences and how he has talked so much about the program needs to be aligned, needs to have more support, needs to keep pace in the world of NIL and the transfer portal. And I think the message is for a year or so. You've talked about that, and the university has in a lot of ways done that, right?
Yeah.
And then you get to the big stage and you can't follow through.
Right. And if you're talking about that on a Tuesday midweek,
yeah,
or an off-season press. That's perfectly fine. Yeah, right after. Yeah. But you're right. USC. Let's just go to USC. We'll get to. Yes. I mean, we got this. Lincoln Riley just seems like a front runner. You know, he's a genius when he's beating up on crappy Texas teams and a whole bunch of schools that Oklahoma's always beaten up on, and now it's not working. The defense isn't good enough. His offense isn't good enough to hide things. The Pac-12 is tougher. And he pouts and gets all upset when anything doesn't go his way. You don't bring out the players. Does it matter whether we get quotes or anything like that? No, but it's symbolic of something. When you try to ban a reporter.
It is. Yeah.
It's not that it's that big of a deal, but it's just symbolic of, like, I'm focused on a bunch of stuff that shouldn't matter. And you go to the NFL, every one of these guys has to stand there. The locker room's open.
Yeah.
You know, if you're the kid that fumbles the punt on the 1 yard line, it goes in for the other touchdown, you got to answer the questions. And so it's just sort of a, what, you know, I think it'd be dispiriting. That team, you know, I mean, the quote, Utah is, this is why, like, picking last week, USC versus Utah, and I'm like, God, I really like USC, I really like USC in this game. And I'm like, if it's Lincoln Riley, it's Kyle Whittingham, I'm taking Utah. And, yep, you know, the quote of the week is Kyle Whittingham talking about his iron tough Bryson Barnes, the quarterback, who was just fantastic down the end of that game. A couple of huge runs and the 23-yard scramble late. He's throwing his shoulder down. And Whittingham says they've got themselves a Heisman Trophy winner, so they're going to make some things, and that's just the way it is. We've got ourselves a pig farmer at quarterback.
Does he really farm pigs?
Well, he grew up on a Milford, Utah pig farm. Awesome. And if you grow up on a pig farm, everybody's got a farm.
There you go.
I do know that much. Ain't no like
raising roughly 12,000 pigs in a barn in southern Utah.
Cody Brunner territory.
Pig
Cody
farmer. Yeah, him and Caleb Williams don't have a ton in common. Then Caleb Williams grew up in the middle of DC.
Nothing against Caleb. Yeah. This isn't his fault, believe me. But I don't know where does USC go from here? This is not the season they were looking for. And once again, they just got out-toughed by a Utah team. They should be better then. I mean, the best thing they got going is they're going to run away from Utah. The worst part is there's a whole bunch of Utah. Utah is the Big Ten.
Yeah,
right. They got pig farmers at quarterback all over that joint.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, USC, this is a crossroads for Lincoln Riley. I think quit being a front runner, grow up a little bit as a head coach, become a little more accountable, get a better defensive coordinator, get a better defense, get tougher as a team, or flee, fight or flight, man. You know, go to the NFL. But if the NFL's watching this, are they really going to say, oh, yeah, I want that guy who's underachieving with the Heisman Trophy winner and whose defenses suck? I think Lincoln Riley he's got to take a hard look at his program and the way it is constructed and the way it does its business and figure out how to be a lot tougher going into the Big Ten.
Yeah. And, Some of the post-game comments were quite interesting. Of course, you know, they were only from him because they didn't make players available. So some of them were interesting, including the fact that he tried to kind of tamp down the narrative that USC was out to only, you know, win a national championship, which he said that he doesn't know where that, you know, came from, that narrative and that mission came from, that it's national championship or bust type. And, you know, he said to the LA Times over the summer, I believe, that exact thing.
Summer 2022. You know, he said it to Blaschke.
Yeah. And then he said something about last year was that we exceeded expectations last year. And we had too many expectations entering, you know, this season. I don't know where they go from here. All of Lincoln Riley's teams seem to be the same, right? They have great quarterbacks and offenses that can score and score quickly and score a lot, but defenses that fail and fail to hold on to leads late, just break down for whatever reason. And kind of fittingly, you know, Utah drove down against USC's defense to win the game in a transfer that USC got from, I believe, Georgia. Bear Alexander, the defensive lineman, got called for a fairly significant personal foul.
He had some other big plays, too, though.
Kept
they need more
Utah,
Bears. So. I'll take Bear hitting late than some of these guys not hitting. I saw some people making, I don't know. I hate criticizing college players and especially their toughness, but a couple of those quarterback runs by Utah, not sure there was a full sellout on every player on that USC defense.
I mean, some business
decisions we hadn't made.
That was certainly the way the Pac-12 championship game was between these two, and it was also very similar to the way the game in Salt Lake City was last year. I mean, Utah has owned them, and a lot of that is, we're just going to run through you and see whether you feel like tackling today.
Well, at least they get rid of Utah. Utah should be in the Big 10. If we were sorting these things out and we have to have these, they are a Big 10 program. Utah is a Big 10 state.
Yeah. They should win the Big 10 West more years than not.
Yeah. They would be, forget it. He'd have the all-time win record if he had coached this whole time. This is what we would say about USC. USC is supposed to be one of the five best programs, top line. Lincoln Riley is supposed to be a top coach. And the great ones find ways to win. Their programs get really tough. And we can talk about, we just talked about Ohio State doing it. Yep. This is not working out the way Ryan Day thought this year would work out with all the recruits and the pyrotechnics he's supposed to have. It's not working out. They're finding a way to win. And that is a really big deal because they're 7-0. And you keep going and you keep going and you keep going. And then maybe, you know, who the heck knows? That's a great program. It's not pretty. And Alabama is the greatest of the programs, right?
Mm.
And it ain't pretty. All of a sudden, they got Jalen Milroe, not this parade of NFL starters. And all of a sudden, they're not quite deep. And the offensive line isn't just loaded with first rounders. And all of a sudden, you get beat pretty hard against Texas. And you know what? You just keep winning. And you get down 13-0 and 20-7 at the half to Tennessee. And then you beat the brakes off them in the second half and cruise to 34-20. That's a great program. I think what Alabama is doing and what Ohio State is doing is showing that's how you get elite.
Yeah.
And Penn State and USC aren't there.
Yeah.
I think that's
when you're at your worst,
when you're at your worst
and not as talented to win, you know.
This could be as good as Nick Saban has ever coached. I mean, you see the thing somebody put out on internet and Schefter retweeted, like, you know, I don't know what team it was. It was just the entire teams on the NFL. This team, that team, they're so loaded with players. Yeah, you have to coach them up great, and he did. And they won all the games. But this is not Alabama. And yet, you know, not out of the question, they're 11-1 playing Georgia in Atlanta and going, sure. Looks like Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. Saban has done an excellent job because, I mean, again, they still can't run the ball. 3.3 yards per carry. That's so not Alabama. You know, 220 yards passing. That's just not much explosiveness, not much, you know, consistency there, but they did second half scoring 27-0. I mean, that is a response to adversity and to being on the brink there. That's impressive. And you got to give them credit for what they are doing. And yeah, the schedule gives them a chance, a very good chance, I think, to be 11-1 and in Atlanta.
Yeah. You always could point to, why Alabama was winning over the last several years. And it's gone through like an evolution. You know, when he first got there, they were winning clearly because of defense, and their defensive front was just far better than everybody. And then it evolved into, you know, he evolved into the spread with Lane about 8 years ago or so. And they began winning because on the perimeter, specifically with receiver, right, they were extraordinary. And then, you know, they started getting the high-level quarterbacks. This team, I don't know how they're winning, but they win. They are. They're resilient. Saban's talked about it after that Texas A&M game. I was in that news conference and he was like almost in tears because he was so proud of the team and so shocked that they won the game. But they are, they're just resilient. They just keep plugging along and finding ways. And it's not pretty, but it doesn't need to be.
See him. They handed him a victory cigar after in lieu of the, famous Josh Heupel picture last year.
Yes.
Everybody. Oh, yeah. Didn't the guy get a tattoo of Josh Heupel smoking the cigar?
With the cigar. Yes, yes. And I visited Knoxville the day that guy was in the facility. They allowed him in the facility to show off the tattoo to Heupel. You know, it's such a college football thing. I was in, hey, where's Josh at? And they're like, oh, he's now meeting with the fan who had the tattoo about the cigar. I'm like, I'm sorry. What?
I mean, you gots to. The guy gets a tattoo of you smoking a cigar. Someone gets a tattoo of me smoking a cigar on them. You can come over. Come on over. Hang out in the backyard.
Come on in. Come on the park. Welcome
anytime.
For a
short visit.
If you're that dumb, I'll come to your place. Don't come to my house.
Yeah,
I'll meet you in a neutral site. Neutral site.
Yes, might be a little want him to know where you live.
Yeah, yes. Josh wasn't inviting him over his house. But yeah, I mean, you got it. I mean, yeah. Anyway, Saban doesn't smoke cigars, of course.
Yeah, he's a chewer. He's a cigar chewer. He said he just chews them. Yes.
That's just—I don't even know what that's all about. Come on, man. You're from West Virginia. Smoke the dang cigar, or else he's trying to hide it. Think he smokes it like secretly? He's out in that back deck of his big boathouse.
I could see Miss Terry saying, "No, I don't want that smell in the house. Forget it."
Yeah, but he's got like a 27,000 square foot deck on that boathouse.
I'm sure he has a pool home. He probably has a separate, lounge of some sort, house, whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, a good cigar. I don't know if it was a good one.
I don't know, man.
Someone probably went down to the 7-Eleven in Tuscaloosa and handed him one of those ones, the little plastic tip on it. Come on. Come on, bro. We got to do a little better than this. All right. I don't know. Saban's killing it. This to me was a very crystal clear difference in the great and the, you're just there. Mm-hmm. And nobody separated better than Alabama on that one. All right. So I was driving back from Columbus to Detroit and tuned in on WJR, the great voice of the Great Lakes, one of those classic 50,000 watt stations that, used to like really be important back in the day. And tuned in and I got the Michigan State broadcast of the Michigan game. The great George Blaha has been doing it for like 40 years or something. Great Pistons announcer, Jason Strayhorn. Nothing like, okay, we're underdogs. We're underdogs. Hasn't been going well, but they've been cheating. They've been cheating. We got our black uniforms on. We got, Spartan dogs. A lot of hope. A lot of hope. Oh, my. It's a sad scene listening to a radio broadcast of a team. I mean, Blah is a total pro. Like I said, he's done NBA for maybe like almost 50 years. Guy should be in the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. But there was nothing to say. I did not get to see the game. I'm glad. I don't know if children should have seen the game. Michigan responded to the Spygate with an absolute bludgeoning. That team was still fired up about last year's tunnel fight. They could have scored all five times in the first half. JJ McCarthy is incredible. We keep watching these teams stumble and barely win. We're into Washington and Texas and Oklahoma, all these teams. Maybe we'll get to them. I don't know. Everyone's close. Michigan's not close. They're just crushing people here. And that was an ugly, ugly. I mean, I no one is expecting a whole lot, but this was utter domination.
Yeah, Pat. that was a beatdown. I was driving at the same time. I pulled over in Cincinnati and watched most of the first half, and I was like, there's no reason to stay and watch the second half because it was a smoking. So. Yeah, kudos to Michigan. Clearly inspired to do it for Connor.
You're not going to help our mentions, Pat. You're not going to help our mentions with this.
Well, here's the thing, Connor. Michigan fans are so sensitive. It's like, What do we do on this podcast? Yeah. These things happen. We make jokes about it. So there's the joke. Yeah. Okay. But no, Michigan's incredibly good. They are by far the most consistent team this year so far. They seem to be the most well-rounded. They're good at everything. And, you know, as Dan alluded to it, with pretty much everybody going up and down and looking various times like they're flat out bad or beatable or whatever, they have not looked that way at all. The schedule still stinks, still waiting for them to play people, but they have been the most impressive team in terms of eye test, I think, by far this year.
This game included not just, it wasn't just this blowout, but we got a little bit of a Adolf Hitler mixed in the game.
My goodness.
Those who didn't see Michigan State on their video board showed a trivia question. And the question was, I believe, what county was Adolf Hitler? Country. What country was Adolf Hitler born? In which country was Adolf Hitler born? I think the game didn't even end, right? And they put out a statement apologizing mid-game for a third party who handles the trivia questions. A lot of administrators. I learned a lot of administrators certainly had comments about this and buzzed me. That was a fun few minutes. So, you got a blowout and a sprinkle in of a dictator.
Well, yes, a murderous, horrible human being, maybe the worst in human history.
Yeah, yes.
Let's put him on the jumbo board.
What in the world?
Unbelievable.
Honestly, it was so unreal. I was like, this is fake.
Fake, yeah.
There's no way they did a trivia question. Because the answer is Austria. He isn't even German.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's like the kind of, oh, really? That's kind of amazing, this guy. Got a country he wasn't even born in to try to fight the entire, right? I guess it's interesting in a history class.
In a football game, putting that face on the Jumbotron. Not a good
His
idea.
Face?
It's the Michigan,
trivia question
Michigan
included
thing.
A depiction of him.
What city in Michigan is known for its cherry festival? That's what you do when I'm like, who in the world thought, hey, let's just flash a Hitler's picture up there. What is this third party?
Yeah.
I want to know who these bastards are. Like, what? Get your act together. I am not easy to offend, but my God.
Everything about that is like, wait. Like, first of all, yes.
Couldn't
why,
be true.
Why this third party would ever come up with that for an idea? But then secondly, you need a third party to do your trivia questions. What, like, again, you have 900 people in your athletic department. Yeah. You guys can't do this stuff yourself? See, do you really need trivia on the scoreboard? There's a lot of things that I don't understand here.
No one read over the trivia questions? There's nobody that like, approves them and maybe edits them? I mean, when you see Hitler's face pop up.
Hey, maybe
screen,
not Hitler. Let's do what, you know? They got any others? You know, do we have any other questions?
Yeah.
What U.S. president was born in Michigan? Let's do that one. Yeah. It's the Michigan State game. We want world leaders. Hey, Gerald Ford. I don't know. Well, he's a Michigan player, so we don't do him. I don't even know. It's so absurd. It was so absurd. It wasn't even funny. It's just like, what in the world is going on? All right. As for the scandal that actually mattered on the field, okay, the Michigan scandal. Great signs by Spartan fans. Jim Harbaugh, don't steal my sign. Harbaugh stole my list. All the different stuff did not matter.
All our fault.
Yes, we have been getting blamed.
It's all fault. Yep.
Ric Flair blamed journalists. Yep. What do we call it? Did he call us?
Yeah.
It's an Instagram post.
Yeah, the media or whatever the... Either media, Flair, maybe, or something like that.
Ross and I
didn't hear about this, Pat. Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah, Ross
Ric
and
Flair
I are pretty
called
excited.
Us out. Yeah.
I don't think he really called us specifically, but we're going to pretend he did.
The media in general,
he said,
I think, or journalists.
Coach Harbaugh, this is in an Instagram post. This is Ric Flair, man. Like, getting trash talked by Ric Flair. This is the greatest moment of my life. Please don't let these ridiculous loser journalists attempt to discredit you in any shape or form. First off, okay. I am me investigating him. It's the NCAA, but that's okay. Yeah, I want Ric Flair.
That's right.
Styling and profiling. Kiss stealing, limousine riding. Yes.
Yes.
I have seen this. Yes. I will get a little bit into inside baseball here.
Yeah.
People have no idea how stories get reported.
Yeah, it's been so frustrating. And I mean, we've dealt with this. I think the height of it for me was during COVID, is reporting on like college football COVID news and just getting hammered for reporting the news. But this has been another thing, is it just people just don't understand our jobs, and don't understand like what we're doing. I think there's too much crossover of opinion and reporting, you know, and people like get confused that everything is an opinion or something. Like what we reported is factual and in news. There are columns and opinions, and you guys offer that certainly quite a bit. But like the news is that the NCAA is conducting an investigation into this sign stealing, whatever system scheme that Michigan had. And they alerted their opponent. It's so serious. They alerted mid-investigation.
Yeah.
They called the Big Ten to alert Michigan's opponents. We're not supposed to write about that. And then the second part of this has been this Connor Stallions, analyst who is on Michigan's staff. You know, we write about that he's a focal point of the investigation, that Big Ten coaches have known it and staffs have known who he is and all this stuff, and just get hammered. Oh my gosh, dredging up all this stuff, you know, media, evil media. And then guess what happens? 4 hours later, Michigan suspends him.
Yeah.
Like we're not making things up, and it's been frustrating, as you can tell.
I don't mind getting yelled at. I think it's part of the deal. It's just, people are going to yell at you. Fine. Every news break is not a leak.
Right.
It takes a lot of... we don't have hard jobs, but you have to do... I had hard jobs. I worked real jobs. This is not a hard job. But it's not like you just sit around and all of a sudden someone calls you up and like, you know, leak something. It takes a lot of reporting and a lot of years. And even the media going, oh, they leaked it to these guys. Nobody leaked crap to us. Are you kidding me?
Right.
I wish it was that easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody hates me. Don't you understand that? Like, I don't have any friends.
People don't know. Yeah. People just don't understand how it works. It just doesn't. You know,
it's like, but even the media, other media people like, oh, this guy leaked that. Like, it's just like, oh, just somebody just like you won the lottery. Like, no, nobody.
And even
anything.
If it is like,
you have to claw it out of people on these stories.
This is not the kind of thing people are running to talk to you about.
Right. Now, like, even if it is quote leaked or you know, you get some tip or something, as we all know, like it's just a small bit, right? Any good reporter, like us, all of us here on the Zoom, like you got to go take it to the next level, right? And always compare it to getting like just a little piece of a puzzle. You got to get other pieces in order to put the puzzle together. And it does. It takes work and stuff, you know.
It's really hard, man. This is nobody knows the trouble we've seen.
It can be a grind.
No, I mean, whatever. I'm baffled at the leak and it's like,
yeah. I mean,
okay. But if you're a reporter, you should know. That's my thing.
Yeah. Right.
I would hope.
Yeah.
Or else you're not really a reporter.
See any of this what you're talking about. You're talking about other media members, I guess.
Go ahead, Pat. I want to talk about the actual scandal because no one
knows. A journalism tangent.
Just a brief point here is, yeah, this isn't the kind of thing that people are just going to call you up and say, hey, here's the whole story of what happened. Let me tell you. Or if they do, they might have it 80% wrong. You don't know. It takes a lot of work to figure out what's right, what's wrong. But secondly, the NCAA, people are saying, well, the NCAA leaked this. No, the NCAA told the Big Ten, which I think it had to do from a competitive standpoint, then it's going to get out. But that doesn't mean that this was the NCAA. Look, we need to get this out there about Michigan because we hate Michigan. I mean, that's just the nature of this particular beast. This is an a current investigation that could impact these games this season adversely, the competitors to Michigan. So you pass along. Here's what we know. Okay, there you go. And then, yes, it's going to get out when maybe all 14 schools were apprised. I don't know. Or maybe just the schools on Michigan's schedule.
No, I would say the NCAA, if they didn't leak it, and maybe they did, maybe they didn't. If we're going to do leaks, I'm not going to say anything. But if you put it out to 14 teams, it's getting out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you kind of know.
Who's going to eventually get out?
You
right.
Have
You're
to
telling
leak
all
it.
These
you
teams it's going to get
people.
Out.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You know,
you tell what do they say? You tell one person and 10 yeah. people know for every one person right. you tell.
Tell yeah. everything. So anyway, it gets out there. All right, let's get to this, though, with the case, because everyone wants to know what's the story.
Tangent
over. What are we going to do? Yeah, tangent over. Nobody feels bad for us. It's fine. I just am sort of bizarre. There's a lot of media that pretends to be the media, I think, and right. don't really quite get it. Mm. The what is going to happen next? Everyone's like, what is going to happen? I don't know. Best I can tell, the NCAA is still trying to figure out what happened. They don't have all the evidence, or they it's a weird situation because we're in the middle of investigation. And by having an investigation on this charge of cheating in some nebulous way, because sign stealing is allowed, but did they have illegal scouting is what we're down to, maybe. Once you charge Jim Harbaugh, once you say once the word gets out, there's an investigation, Harbaugh is guilty in some segment of the population's mind forever. This is not a good way. It's not a fair way for the accused to handle this. Like, at least you'd want, we are now charging you with this, right? Not just, we're investigating whether or not you did this. I mean, what do they, at the end, if they just go, oops, we were all wrong, which I'm not expecting, but let's say they did. Still, people be like, yeah, he did something, though. Right.
Oh, of course. No.
Yeah.
You can't unring the bell of they were spying.
Yeah. You know? They were spying. And what kind of spying? But the idea, one thing we reported was we never said staffers were getting, assistant coaches were flying around the country illegally scouting the opponents and maybe videotaping the sideline. We don't know. I don't know if anyone knows the full story. Maybe Michigan does. At this point, we never said that. That kind of is what got taken by a lot of people. The assistant coaches have to coach their games. Michigan's had a game every week. They have their bye weeks next week. Mm-hmm. So, and the idea there would be a vast, a lot of terms get thrown out there, right? It's a vast conspiracy. It's this. In what way? Like if the idea that like the entire Michigan athletic department would be like, hey, we're going to all break the rules. We're going to pay for your travel or your ticket. Like the compliance department's in on it, the travel, the accounting, everybody knows about it. That really isn't how conspiracies generally work. They're usually pretty small. And that's why my theory on the case is it's going to come down to Connor, the Naval Academy grad and Marine captain who joins the staff last year. And shows an acumen. It's my theory. I don't know because we don't know any of the evidence. But I think it's more likely that it comes down to a young assistant coach who's very good at breaking down the signs and deciphering the signs. And he starts making a name for himself within the staff for this because every coach in the country wants one of these guys. And rather than just getting his information from video and live in-game stuff, perhaps he is putting his thumb on the scale and having people, whether it's his friends or family or somebody, I don't know, go to games and film some stuff or take pictures or jot down notes on what they're seeing. I don't even know how you do it other than video because they have like five guys over there doing signals. Makes him even better at the job. The coaches at Michigan don't question it because they have this whiz kid from the Naval Academy and trained by the military to do this. And they're just excited, like the young guy in the office that can fix all the computers. And it's a rogue lone wolf assistant doing this. And nobody at Michigan knew. That to me is Occam's razor. That's the most likely explanation. That is also a very good explanation if you're a Michigan fan. And I don't know. I don't know this is going to pan out. I don't know that the NCAA is going to come back and go, oh no, we found all the videos on Jim Harbaugh's computer and he was orchestrating it. We might. But to me, it's much more likely in these things that it's one person trying to get ahead in their career and not telling anyone because it was damaged them than many people in a staff knowing about it and all trying to shut up. But how did they get out? There's other questions. There's still a lot of questions, but that's where I'm kind of at right now. And I'm more than willing to be proven wrong. But if you ask me what I think of the case right now, that's what I'm telling people.
Yeah, I mean, there's still many layers that need to be peeled back, and we're probably not going to be the first people to do that. The NCAA probably is. They're in the midst of it probably now. I know, I think it was Pete that reported that they have wanted access to Connor Stallion's computer, which would probably tell them several things. You know, what I was told was similar to what you guys have been told, that there were people out doing impermissible scouting. Who they were, I don't know. What was their capacity? What was their contact with Connor? What was their contact with other people within the staff? And then, yeah, what was Connor's distribution of their information? If he got information from them and that he passed it on, did he pass it on as his own, or did he pass it on as, hey, I've got this from this stadium, this is what they're doing? Is he passing along the video? If he's sending video to full-time staff, is full-time staff saying, where'd you get the video? Or not? Or is he just keeping it all to himself, to your point, Dan, and saying, look how smart I am. This is me here. This is all me doing this. You know, my questions are, if this is a guy who's shown this real gift for this, and I'm an assistant coach who's using his information, I'm like, hey, how are you doing this? Where are you getting this information? I would have some curiosity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Navy, I'd want to know. It. He's the naval guy, though.
Yeah.
He's like, a football coach.
He's got all these answers. Hey, Connor, where are you getting this stuff from?
Yeah. Espionage training.
Did he have espionage training, or was he just in the Navy? I mean, do we actually know that?
Saying,
or
are we ascribing
superpowers to him because he went to the Naval Academy?
How many people you know went to the Naval Academy? I know very few, but they're smart and they know that if a guy shows up and is like, I'm doing research for you in the office to help your stories, and he comes up with the most amazing research, and you're like, all right, remember in like Moneyball, like Billy Beane's like, says to the, who's the Jonah Hill guy? He's like, where'd you go to school? He's like, the guy's throwing out all these numbers, goes to Yale, studied economics. He's just like, okay, must know what he's talking about. Like, if you got this, and you're like, man, we got this guy. He's great. And honestly, how big is the sign stealing? They all can steal it. It's just he's doing it faster.
Yeah,
maybe he's better. Maybe he isn't. Or maybe he isn't better. I don't know. But the military thing actually to me is like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't question that because I have no idea what they're teaching at Annapolis. All I know is I'm not nearly smart enough to get into that place.
Maybe it's that simple. Maybe there is a profound lack of curiosity at Michigan about where he's getting his information.
Most football coaches are like, yeah, man, I played like some JUCO ball at like Southeast Oklahoma and pad level, right?
Either way, them proving that Harbaugh knew they were stealing signs, right, is one thing, because the kid's standing like right by him on the sideline.
They know he was stealing signs.
But, right.
Yeah.
But proving that Harbaugh knew how they were getting the information, whether that's through technically, right, through cyber hacking sort of thing. Which has been alleged as well, or sending people on the road and recording opponents' games. Like, that's going to be more difficult, right, to prove somewhat that he knew that. And that's what the rule breaking is. Not
the case
not
would be a
signs.
Violation, well, even if I think it could be a violation, even if a low level staffer is breaking the rule. That it's not necessarily like, oh, Michigan's cleared. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not saying that. The question is, was Jim Harbaugh overseeing this vast operation? That's going to be a lot harder to prove, and that may not be the most likely answer. Because everyone goes, why the hell would they do that? And you go, because they didn't, right? Like, Oxum's razor explains a lot of stuff. Is it a young guy trying to get ahead? I'm not saying it in a violation or shouldn't be a thing or any of that. I don't know that it will matter. The NCAA will just have to prove, like, well, if this guy's ordering them, it's the same thing as the head coach. But how high does it go and where does it go? That's all. I don't care what the punishment is.
Well, that's all right. So here are the things that from an NCAA standpoint. First of all, they have to decide, is this a playing rules violation or is this a bylaw violation? And that, I don't believe, has been decided yet. If it's a playing rules violation, this is probably over quickly and soon and harmlessly, because as was pointed out to me, it's like there isn't even a 15-yard penalty for this. This is one of those things where you're like, okay, fire that guy. Okay, all right, we'll fire him. But if it's a bylaw violation, and I've talked to some lawyers that know this stuff, then it's like, okay, how extensive was it? Was it something they were doing over a period of time? Was it, you know, did they do this for years? Did they do it at every game? How, you know, how did, then, okay, right. It becomes more serious the more involved they were in getting this. And ultimately, 2023 NCAA bylaws, head coach is responsible for what happens in his program, period. Strict liability. You will be charged with a head coach control violation if somebody in your staff committed a violation. What will the penalty be? Maybe nothing, maybe small. If they conclude that Jim Harbaugh really didn't know anything, they might just say, all right, well, or they may say, you know what? Michigan, you're already under investigation. We think there's a real institutional control problem. We're going to hit you. We don't know. And that's not going to be decided till 2024 if this becomes a bylaw case, which so far it's not.
Yeah, I forgot about the change to the head coach, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Head coach accountability. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they came up with that for basketball coaches because those staffs are smaller.
Yeah.
Because it would be like literally the right-hand man would be out dropping you know, car keys off on the recruiting trail, and the head coach would go, what? Harbaugh, I'm not forgiving any college football coach. They drop plenty of keys off too, but like these staffs are huge. Like at some point you're like, I gotta, yeah. Whoa, man, there's 70 dudes. Like he calls. Well, so
one of the pitfalls of empire building. If you're going to have 70 people working for you.
Yep. Yeah. Too many guys here, but we'll see. That's my theory right now. We'll see what happens though, because there could be, NCAA could come out with all sorts of information that absolutely buries them. Or you could sit there and go, regardless, damage done in terms of reputation. And, the signs will never stop. All right, let's get to real rule violations, like inadvertent fair catch. Inadvertent fair catch. I've spent the last 2.5 weeks as the world's biggest Iowa football fan, so I was crushed. I was crushed on the situation. The Hawkeyes locked in a 12-10. They're losing 12-10 to Minnesota in a thriller. That under was the easiest bet in the world. They had 12 yards on 24 plays in the second half. They punt to Cooper DeJean. They force the punt. Punting is winning. He gets the ball, charges down, scores a touchdown. Iowa's probably going to win this football game on special teams. Incredible game. Place is going crazy. They appear to go to a review on all scoring plays are reviewable. They are reviewed even. They go and they're checking the review, maybe to see, it seemed like if they had stepped out of bounds, and they determined that when he was pointing at where the ball was going to land, he inadvertently signaled fair catch. And so the ball is dead. Iowa deserved to lose the game. They deserved to lose every game. Okay. But, man, that sucks. As an Iowa fan now, as a big time, long-standing, 2.5 week Iowa fan, I find this to be reprehensible. Pat, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, this is an arcane rule. It really is. And, you know, if you are waving to get away from the ball or whatever, you're basically making an impermissible signal. And so the play is dead, right? It seems really picayune. I don't like it. It was a hell of a turn for my money. Honest to God, I will say this. I think Cooper DeJean is the second best player in the Big Ten behind Marvin Harrison. He is unbelievable. He's their best offense, and he doesn't even play offense. He's a defensive back. But it's a brutal way to lose. But yes, it's the whole thing is very, very Iowa. Like, they would have been peak Iowa for them to win a 12-10 game in which they are completely inept on that play. But play gets wiped out. It's unfortunate for him. I feel bad for him. I feel bad for all Iowa kind. You finally have an exciting play, and it gets wiped out.
right. Yeah, we appreciate your thoughts. We appreciate it.
I'm in agreement. I'm watching the play again as I'm talking, and so he's got his right hand toward where the ball's coming, and he's pointing clearly at teammates, maybe to kind of like, hey, there's the ball's going to land there. And then the other hand, clearly to me, is saying kind of like, move away, right? Move away from the ball. Yeah. The ball's landing there. Move away. Move away. The hand doesn't, let alone go above his head, the hand doesn't go above his shoulder, I don't believe, his shoulder pad. It really is an unfortunate call, and one that will be talked about for quite some time. But they did rule in, what is it, an inadvertent
fair catch. Here's a question I had, and was this reviewable?
Like, they said it was.
But like, did they think, I'm still not sure, were they reviewing that he was out of bounds or not? Or were we just reviewing the score? Because if you're just looking for any violation on the play, I guarantee you there was a hold on the run back too. Like, you can't... Yeah. Right, like if somebody's catching a ball in the end zone, you're like, oh, the ball hit the ground, and not, and then you look at the play, and you're like, oh, offensive line held.
Well, I don't think you can then throw the flag on like a hold, right? I mean,
but this is
that's
like,
not a...
Were they reviewing this?
Well, they were apparently, Kirk Ferentz said at first it was out of bounds.
Yeah,
was the
that's
issue,
my thing.
Right? The out of bounds
was the
issue.
Then can you then morph it into this other thing?
Yeah, how much do you get to review when you go to review?
Also, on the return, and I don't know, I didn't see any interviews of Minnesota players, but just watching like the video, I mean, Minnesota players at first didn't seem to think that he was fair catching the ball. The first guy flew in and tried to tackle him and then got thrown off and out of bounds.
Yeah, that guy wasn't fooled.
There were violations everywhere. Yeah, here's Ferentz. It was interesting. The most peculiar part for me, at least the initial replay, was to find if he's in or out of bounds, which clearly he was in bounds. Somehow we went from that to a whole different series of topics, and it's really hard to accept the explanation that we got. Maybe I slept through the meeting when they covered there, but I'm still not sure who makes the final decision. Kurt Ferentz is...
he's pretty good at the passive-aggressive comments, you know? Yeah.
It's like, I'm
about
old.
The NCAA with the gambling, about the the Iowa investigation, the CBI or whatever there. Oh, yeah.
Also passive aggressive offensively.
Yes.
Mostly passive.
Yeah, we're waiting for the aggressive part. They're going to score 56 next week.
The punt return, that's the aggression.
The aggression is all punt return. Anyway, tough loss. There were a number of really tough calls out there. Tough calls. Houston, man, they got a brutal spot against Texas. Yeah. In a game that, man, would have meant a great deal. Stacy Snead appeared to get to about the 8.5, 8-yard line. All they had to do was get to the 9. They put it up at like almost the 10. It was a terrible spot. Pitt had a slide. It's kind of disputable. Tough. Anyway, let's talk about teams that deserve to lose. Clemson. If William Christopher thought the fans were a little tough before, blew a 10-point lead against Miami. And let's give Miami some credit. They could have quit on this season. This was looking like one of those 6-6 head to the Shreveport Bowl for them.
And playing without their starting quarterback, too.
No quarterback. And they got after it Saturday night. I know everyone's all over Mario Cristobal, and oh, he's a horrible coach. They're going to be really good. He built up Oregon, and they're really like – they keep getting recruits. He'll be all right. They're gonna be
all right. And this could have really been bad for him. Because I don't know if you guys like watched all the game, but Miami got the ball, but it was tied. Miami got the ball back with about 1:40 left, and moved the ball to the around 40. I think the 40-yard line, their own 40. So they're about 25 yards or so away from field goal range with about 50 seconds left in the game, a tie game. And Mario ran out the clock and purposely ran the ball. And it was shocking to see. And they had one timeout. It was shocking to see. So for him, good fortune, right, in the end that they did end up winning the game. Because, whoo boy, if they don't win the game, there's going to be much made of that as well. But
yeah, the game management issues remain for Mario. But a gutty win.
But it was a gutty win. Defensively, they played really well. And man, yeah, Clemson just the project here for Garrett Riley, this Garrett Riley project at Clemson at offensive coordinator and the Cade Klubnik at quarterback, it is not working. And I think in the end, at the goal line they needed a touchdown. You know, it was fourth and goal. Clemson needed a touchdown in double overtime. And fourth and goal from, I think, the one or even the half-yard line, right? And Klubnik was supposed to hand it off, according to Dabo Swinney, after the game. And he kept it and ran around or tried to run around left end. And, of course, he was being mauled, like chased by, like, five-star defensive ends. And he's this Klubnik, this quarterback, and he didn't get anywhere. And you could see on the sideline, they showed Dabo immediately took off his hat, and he appeared to be yelling toward, you know, Klubnik about the play, just in complete disbelief. But, oof, yeah, Clemson offensively, they've got some issues.
Klubnik, 18 to 34, 5 sacks. He had a pick, 2 TDs, 314 yards, but only 18 completions. The running game, running Shipley directly into the line, seemed to be a popular choice. 2.9 yards per carry by running backs. Not good. Go ahead, Pat.
They got major offensive issues with the line, with the backs, the receiver. You know, there's nothing good about that offense right now. You score 20 points in a double overtime game, you're Clemson. Things are bad.
All right, show has gone long. It was, like I said, a heck of a game. We haven't even got to all the other stuff. Carolina loses, all that. We'll see if it comes up in the finale here. Rather than wait to the end of the year, we like giving out Heismans every week. We don't care. We don't actually get an award, so it doesn't cost us anything. We don't have to build one of those nice statues. Our Heisman house, by the way, would be like the land of misfit toys. Imagine that thing.
Oh, my God. Some of the thousands people we've given people, those awards
yeah,
to.
Yeah, we've given it. would not be the cool Heisman house that they have. You're like,
no.
Dude, I've just had like an omelet with Barry Sanders. It's awesome. Pat, you got a small sample Heisman?
I do, and it's from the Arizona State-Washington freak show that ended at like 2:05 a.m., in which it looked forever like Washington was going to lose to a 1-5 team at home. Like, I could not believe this is the same team that Ross Dellinger and I watched in person last week play so well and offensively brilliantly against Oregon. Yeah, and now all of a sudden they can't do anything against 1-5 ASU. So the power of emotion, rather strong in college football. But my small sample Heisman, Michelle Powell. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his first name correctly. If not, I apologize. Junior cornerback who stepped in front of the Arizona State pass when they should have been kicking a field goal to take a 10-6 lead and force the Washington offense to score a touchdown. Instead, they were going for it on 4th-and-3, throwing it out into the flat, and Powell picks it and goes 90 yards for the game-winning touchdown for the Huskies. And just for the record, this kind of season's been in college football. Iowa scored more offensive touchdowns on Saturday than Washington.
College football. Yeah. Speaking of, just piggybacking really quickly, we talked about the officiating decisions on Saturday and how many late impacted games. Coaching decisions on Saturday, especially when it comes to fourth downs, were head scratching. And that was kind of another. Now, I know Arizona State, I think, has kicking issues, but that was a head scratch. There was back to back head scratchers there, both officiating and coaching. Because the play before, of course, the flag was picked up from Arizona. They called a pass interference on Washington on a third down. They picked up the flag, and the replay showed clear pass interference, which would give Arizona State the ball inside the 10 at first and goal, and almost secured the win at that point, probably. Yeah. So,
Defensive back damn near pulled the jersey off of the Arizona State receiver. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
All right, my small sample Heisman goes to Virginia running back Mike Hollins. scored 3 touchdowns, 66 yards, 15 carries. You guys might remember Mike Collins was shot in the tragic shooting last November down there in Charlottesville in a bus. A class was returning from a class trip to Washington, D.C., and a gunman was on the bus who was in the class and killed and shot and killed 3 football players. In a 4th, Mike Collins was injured. He was on a ventilator, multiple surgeries. You know, he was kind of heralded as a hero on the bus, you know, survived this thing. And, you know, 11 months later, right, he's helping lead Virginia to the program's first top 10 road victory, upsetting North Carolina in Chapel Hill. So give it up, Mike Collins.
That is the ultimate small sample Heisman right there.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You have 3 teammates murdered in a bus by a former teammate. I think I remember when he was coming back, he said he thought about quitting. He wanted to come back just to play to honor them. And then you deliver 3 touchdowns in this upset. Fantastic. That program has been through some toughness. So Mike Collins is that's the ultimate one. All right. I am going to give mine to Daquan Finn, the quarterback at Toledo. I think I've given him the small sample. He's got a few of them. He's like Archie Griffin, multiple small sample Heismans, but he is everything down at Toledo's offense. Battle of the MAC, two 6-1 teams. Toledo wins 21-17 at Miami, Ohio. Daquan throws 2 touchdown passes, rushes for another one. The Rockets win. Said before the season they had a chance to be like that group of 5 team. They lost to Illinois, so that's probably not going to happen, but this is an excellent, excellent football team. And this was a big time MAC game. It was an exciting game. Miami, Ohio stormed back to try to make it a game late. Couldn't quite do it with a big second half comeback. But it was MACtion at its best, and Daquan Finn is a heck of a football player. I remember when he was coming out of high school, there was some people in Detroit saying Michigan State should have signed him, and they didn't. And he went to Toledo, and Toledo's got a better quarterback than Michigan State, I'll tell you that. And Daquan Finn gets another small sample Heisman for me. That's it's a good spot. Max, I give a lot of Max small sample Heismans, I feel.
That's fine. Somebody needs to.
All right, we said plenty of mean things about pretty much everybody, including ourselves at times, I think, today. Can we say something nice? Ross, Pat, anyone got who's first
to
say something nice?
I got something, nice to say.
All right.
I got something really nice to say. It's about USC.
Really?
As we discussed earlier a little bit briefly, USC and Coach Lincoln Riley decided not to bring out players for post-game interviews after the loss to Utah. Mm-hmm. No players talked. And according to USC beat writers, one who has covered the team for over 20 years, it's the first time he can remember it ever happening that no players after a game came out to talk. And I just want to commend USC. This is a wonderful move and really should happen more often. The evil media, okay, should be put in their place. All right. This cannot happen. You know, this is you know, we've got I think the media, us evil media, right, feel that we're entitled to everything. We must talk to everybody, right? This is just brilliance by USC. Let's not hear from the players, because who wants to hear from them, right? They're the only the ones, you know, playing the games. Let's just focus on Mr. Coach. You know, in the era of name, image, and likeness, NIL, right? Like, it's time to treat players like professional players, right? Like, these players are eventually going to go to the NFL, some of them at least, and have to face the media. So obviously I was joking earlier. Like, it's ridiculous what they're doing. And it's just, it's not only a bad look, and it's not even us, I think, that are hurt by us as being the media that are hurt by this. You know, I mean, I think fans and readers want to hear from players, especially the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. you know, after a loss, after a second straight loss. So
I don't even think media gets hurt by this. It's actually easier because you only got one interview to transcribe.
Right.
Our jobs are easier. So, now, it allows the coach to control all the message, and he can say who's at fault and who isn't because he's the only voice, and the workers don't get a say.
That's my something nice. Congratulations, USC.
Say something nice
good
about
job.
Tim Tessalone, way to go. Who used to run the operation out there, and this wouldn't be that's happening right. at USC if we still had Tim Tessalone, but he retired justly, one of the greatest sports information directors through thick and thin we've ever had in college athletics.
Good job, Ross, USC. Way to go.
That was impressive. That was my level of sarcasm there.
Yeah. Say something nice.
I don't have that sarcasm knack, though.
No, you know, it's not. But it was good. Good effort. You're getting there. We're dragging you down to our level.
Slowly.
Slowly.
Pulling you into the ooze. Yeah. All right. I'm going to say something nice about the Air Force Academy, which is now 7-0. Halfway to the Commander-in-Chief's trophy because they beat Navy. Now they just have to beat Army, and they win that again this year. They've got the inside track, I think, right now on the Group of Five New Year's Six bowl bid. We'll see how it plays out. But they have been an impressive 7-0. They've only had one close game. That was against Wyoming. Schedule, pretty manageable the rest of the way. Could have a big showdown with UNLV. But Troy Calhoun, the coach there, says, all right, we spent the first month of the season talking a lot about a college football coach in the state of Colorado. It sure wasn't Troy Calhoun. It was Deion Sanders, and Troy Calhoun is the least like Deion Sanders of about anybody in college football. He is low-key. He is, you know, not a lot of flair. His team doesn't play with a lot of flair, but man, he wins year after year after year after year, and this may be his best team. And so I'm going to say something nice about Troy Calhoun and the Air Force Falcons.
All right. I'm going to say something nice about the Florida State Seminoles. They are losing to Duke 20-17. I believe when Duke led 10-0 in the first quarter Saturday night, it was the largest lead Duke has ever held over Florida State. I think I saw that set. Makes sense. Riley Leonard, Duke's quarterback, gets hurt. But still, it's 20-17 in the fourth quarter. And a little what we were talking about earlier, this is where great teams find a way to win and not great teams don't. And Florida State didn't just eke it out on some bad call or something. They put the pedal down. Jordan Travis rushed for a touchdown. Threw for a touchdown. Rodney Hill rushed for a touchdown. They end up essentially blowing them out 38-20. Total shutdown by Florida State at the end. I understand that Riley was hurt, but this was Florida State hitting the gear when they had to hit the gear. And that is a sign to me that Mike Norvell's got his program when they're in a dogfight with one of these teams that no one wants to play Duke. Especially with Riley Leonard. They may not win all these games, but they are a pain in the neck right now to everybody. And they show it was a show of force at the end of that game. And I'm a Seminole fan. You watch Tallahassee rocking like that on Saturday night, and they just get that. I mean, this was that wave of power they've had at times. That's a really good football team. So I'm going to say something nice about FSU. All right,
quick. That reminded me of what they did to LSU in the season opener. They put their foot on the throat and stomped. I mean, that was a very strong way to finish a game.
Yeah, good point. Like, they're closing. And that is, I mean, they just took that game and said, we're winning.
Yep.
Like, this game's, you know, both sides of the ball, whole thing. So, all of that. Hey, NBA season is right around the corner. Never been a better time. It's really now. Do it. Sign up for a fantasy basketball league with some buddies. If you don't got a bunch of buddies that are big NBA fans, want to do it all season, a bunch of strangers you can sign up with too. Draft your league at yahoofantasy.com or in the Yahoo Fantasy app. NBA season starts this week. All right, that's our show. We did go long. Appreciate everyone listening. It was a wild week. We didn't even get to everything, but we will try to get to more on Tuesday. Season is rocking and rolling. Don't miss a single episode. We appreciate all the people that listen every single time. We have a very loyal audience, and we thank you. Please continue to subscribe. Tell your friends about us. Share us on social media. Do whatever you can to help us out. It's since you don't pay for this thing or anything like that. All right, we will talk to you later.